Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you so much, one and all, for hanging out with me on this fabulous, sunny, lovely Friday here in St. Louis. You are listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble, your host. Again, thank you, everyone, for hanging out with me. TGIF, people, we have made it to Friday. The weekend is upon us. I know that I am very happy about that, and I hope that you are, too. Hope everyone has a fantastic weekend planned for them. We've got a lot going on here, as always. There's never a dull moment here at Conservative Cauldron Radio because, well, there is never a dull moment in Washington, unfortunately. Maybe we need some dull moments. That might be nice. It might solve a lot of problems. But we got a lot to get into today, and we're going to try to get to all of it. Breaking just this morning is, it could be bad for Hillary Clinton. And we will have to see how, and actually if this plays out, if she is protected by the Justice Department, by her her friends in Washington, including the media and those sorts of things. But again, breaking this morning, this is a report I have from CNBC, I believe. This is, again, a report from CNBC. Two inspectors general have asked the Justice Department to open a criminal investigation into whether sensitive government information was mishandled in connection with the personal email account of Hillary Rodham Clinton, used as Secretary of State. Senior government officials said, well, this isn't, they announced it yesterday, but as to my knowledge, this is just breaking this morning. And it says here that the request follows an assessment in a June 29th memo by the inspectors general for the State Department and the intelligence agencies that Mrs. Clinton's private account contained hundreds of potentially classified emails. The memo was written to Patrick F. Kennedy, the Undersecretary of State for Management. And it goes on to say here that it is not clear if any of the information in the emails was marked as classified by the State Department when Mrs. Clinton sent or received them. Now, right here in the beginning of this, the first thing that has jumped out about this to me is that there seems to be a lot of nitpicking going on. Well, it was classified then, but it's not classified now, or not classified then, but it's classified now. It's way too, like I said, way too nitpicky, way too in the weeds. And that could be being done on purpose for low information voters, because when you start saying, well, it was classified then, but it's not classified now, and you go through all of this minutia, low information voters are going to glaze over, and they're just going to be like, yeah, whatever, you know, and it's going to go right past them, and they're going to keep flipping the channels until they hit Dancing with the Stars. But excuse me, that's kind of the first thing that I notice about this. And this goes on to say here, since her use of a private email account for official State Department business was revealed back in March, Mrs. Clinton has repeatedly said that there was no classified information on her server. Well, okay, we'll talk about that in a minute. And it also goes on to say that the Justice Department has not decided if it will open an investigation. And a spokesman for the Clinton presidential campaign has declined to comment. Again, this is two inspectors general. They have requested the Justice Department to open a criminal investigation. Well, now for most of us who are political geeks and follow the goings on in Washington, you know, usually when you hear the word criminal surrounding anyone, that it tends to change things a little bit depending on the circumstances and depending on the situation. But we know, given the history of the Clintons, that a lot of times the word criminal, when you include that word in a sentence with the Clintons, it doesn't really matter, because in some manner, shape, or form, they always manage to wiggle out of it. And, you know, this is one of those things, I think, that they could drag on and on and on and on, and they could make it drag on to the point of where anything substantive would not come out until after the 2016 election. They're going to make sure that there's some serious foot dragging and that no vital information would come out until after the election. And, you know, you've got to wonder too, I think, let's say, is the Justice Department going to take this on, or are they going to give some reason for not taking it on, which really is the underlying reason for not taking it on? It's just going to be because they want to cover for her. Because we know that there are a lot of Clinton cronies and Clinton friends in Washington, and if they feel that they need to do that, they will. But this report, again, from CNBC, goes on to say that the issue here, for people maybe who are not familiar, or maybe that this story has kind of faded into the woodwork a little bit, the issue here are that there are thousands of pages of state Hillary Clinton's private account, and she has claimed that she used this account because it was more convenient. However, this private email account, this private email server, also shielded her, any correspondence that she had, from the Congressional and Freedom of Information Act requests, which is very interesting, because not only does it do that, it shields any correspondence to anyone, from anyone to her, that she might deem a problem for her, be it presidential or be it administrative, at, you know, referring to her time as Secretary of State. But the one thing maybe that people don't realize is that it also kept key people, including the president, kept key people from knowing that her buddy, Sid Blumenthal, affectionately known in Washington as Sid Vicious, kept people from knowing that Sidney Blumenthal was in the loop on pretty much everything that was going on in the State Department. Now, another thing maybe that people may not know is that when Hillary Clinton became Secretary of State, she wanted to bring Sidney Blumenthal onto her staff. Apparently, Sidney Blumenthal is her right-hand man, second only to Huma Abedin, also affectionately known as Mrs. Anthony Weiner, Huma Weiner. And it's also known that the president and the people around the president hate Sidney Blumenthal's guts. It's also rumored that Sidney Blumenthal is the architect, if you will, of the whole birther thing that went on during the 2008 campaign. Because a lot of people forget that the whole birther thing was not a Tea Party thing. It was not a conservative thing. It was not a Republican. That came about through Hillary Clinton's 2008 presidential campaign. And it is widely rumored that Sidney Blumenthal was the creator of this. So it shields her any correspondence of hers from the Freedom of Information Act, but then it also shields people from knowing that Sid Vicious was completely in the State Department loop, which is also very interesting. And so when she started getting a lot of criticism about this private email server, she asked the State Department to release all of her emails. Well, the thing with that is that, again, you're going to have people who are covering for Hillary Clinton in the State Department still to this day, and they get to decide which emails are released and which aren't. That's, you know, that's the chicken guard, the fox guarding the hen house, you know. But this report goes on to say that in the course of the email review, State Department officials determined that some of the information in the messages should be retroactively classified. And that seems kind of funny to me. Well, it's already out there. How do you retroactively classify something? In the 3,000 pages that were released, portions of 24 emails were redacted because they were upgraded to classified status. But none of those were marked as classified at the time that Mrs. Clinton handled them. And there was a second memo to Patrick Kennedy at the State Department on July 17th. The inspectors general said that at least one of the emails made public by the State Department contained classified information, but they would not identify the email or reveal anything that was included in the email. So that remains a mystery. But there's also been some criticism as to how cooperative the State Department has been with the requests, for instance, by the House Benghazi Committee that is headed up by South Carolina Representative Trey Gowdy. They have been less than cooperative at times. And on Monday of this week, a federal judge sharply questioned the State Department, their lawyers, at a hearing about why they had not responded to some of these Freedom of Information requests, some of which are 4 years old. And the quote here by the judge, this is Judge Richard Leon of the United States District Court. He says, quote, "I want to find out what has been going on over there. I should say what's not been going on over there." The judge goes on to say, "For reasons known only to itself, the State Department has been, to say the least, recalcitrant in responding." And also, Mr. Gowdy has gone on to say that that the State Department is pretty much twisting themselves into pretzels to keep from handing over a lot of these documents. And so that is the latest this morning, is that there has been a request. It's only a request at this point by two inspectors general to the State Department to open a criminal investigation into this whole, into Emailgate. And again, we know what happens when Clinton's, and this should be an issue all unto itself, is that when the Clintons get involved in something that could be possibly criminal, or they have such a shady track record that they're so well practiced in this. That's the problem. And, you know, it's just another thing in a long line of Clinton escapades. And, you know, I think, well, it kind of leads into another, you know, into another area here, and that would be Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. And I happen to have some poll numbers here about said presidential campaign. It's from CNN, and it is from Wednesday of this week. Like I said, it's been a bad week. It has not been a good week for Queen Hillary. According to CNN, that Hillary Clinton is trailing three of the top presidential Republican candidates in head-to-head matchups in polls in Colorado, Iowa, and Virginia. And one of these is a Quinnipiac University poll. It's a swing state polling. And again, released on Wednesday, shows Hillary Clinton trailing Florida Governor Jeb Bush, Florida Senator Marco Rubio, and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker in each of those states. And actually here, of course, we know the whole Trump thing. Trump is ahead in many, many polls. And the thing here is that Hillary Clinton's biggest problem, ironically, is that these polls are showing her biggest problem is that voters say that they don't trust her, that they find her untrustworthy. For instance, In Colorado, only 34% of voters said they see Hillary Clinton as honest and trustworthy, while 62% say they don't. Iowa, the numbers are 33 to 59% untrustworthy, a drop from 45 to 47% in April, and in Virginia, was where she did the best. That was, she came in at 39% saying they trust her to 55% saying they don't. This poll was conducted on July 9th through the 20th in these three states, in Colorado, Iowa, and Virginia. And they polled 1,200 voters, and the margin of error, it says here, is plus or minus 2.8 percentage points in each state. In Colorado, Hillary Clinton trails Marco Rubio 38-46, Jeb Bush 36-41, and Scott Walker 38-47. In Iowa, she trails Rubio 36-44, Bush 36-42, and Walker 37-45. And in Virginia is where she may be doing the best here, which think about it for a minute. That includes portions of Washington, D.C., so, you know, you're going to have a lot of liberals being polled there. In Virginia, she has the narrowest margins between her and any Republican, where she is still behind Marco Rubio, 41-43, Bush, 39-42, and Walker, 40-43. And it also says in Colorado, actually, that Scott Walker did the best. 3 out of 10 voters said, however, that they weren't ready to weigh in on questions about his honesty or leadership skills. But here's the thing, is that one of the assistant directors here of this Quinnipiac, say that three times fast, university poll, someone named Tim Malloy, said that Hillary Clinton's numbers on honesty and trust may border on abysmal, but he also cites that Scott Walker has some name recognition problems. And also very clearly in Colorado, you know, he goes on to say, do Colorado voters trust Hillary? They very clearly do not. And in another question in the poll, do they think that she cares about their needs? No, they do not. So, again, Hillary Clinton is already having polling problems. She's already having number problems when it comes to trustworthiness and transparency and honesty and things of that sort. And this is certainly not going to help her. And here's the thing. The thing is that, and you're going to have this on both sides, is that Hillary Clinton is going to have, just like, you know, pick a Republican. Hillary Clinton is going to have her hardcore Democrat supporters who are going to support and defend, they're going to support and defend her to the death. They're going to support and defend her regardless of what she does. And there's going to be a certain chunk of Democrat voters who are going to vote for her regardless. They may not think that she is the most trustworthy and the most honest and the most transparent, but in their minds, better than any Republican on the ticket. So they're going to pull that lever for Hillary Clinton regardless. And you're always going to have a chunk of people like that. But here's my theory about it. This is what I think. I could be wrong, but here's what I think. If you are polling, and I have not seen any poll numbers yet between, well, actually I have, between the Democrat candidates, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, who am I leaving out, Lincoln Chafee, she's still way ahead of all of these guys. But here's the thing. Bernie Sanders is making a lot of waves. He is an unabashed socialist, and he is drawing a lot of crowds wherever he goes. And we've got a year and a half. This is very, very early. And what I think is that for whatever reason that Hillary would either A, get the nomination and go on to the general election, but she would lose, or she would not get the Democrat nomination for president, here's what's going to happen. If either of those two things happen, Hillary Clinton is, and the Clinton camp, the Clinton cronies, the Clinton toadies, if that should happen, what this means, who knows, given the fact that Barack Obama is a lame duck. He cannot run for president again. You know, nobody really knows what his future plans beyond the White House are at this point. But if either one of those two things happens, who do you think that not just Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, and any of their inner circle, who do you think that they're going to blame for her loss in the general election, or be it the loss of the Democrat Party nomination? Who do you think they are going to place blame on? Whose shoulders is that blame going to be squarely put on? You know who that person is going to be? Barack Obama. And it goes back to 2008. I could be wrong, but that is my prediction. That is my theory. I'm going to take a break. We are going to be back in just a minute. We've got lots to talk about. We've got another horrible movie theater shooting, this time in Louisiana. We've got, of course, the whole Iran nuke deal, and we've just got a lot of other stuff to get into. So I'm going to take a break. Don't go away. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks for hanging out with me. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
I've heard people say that too much of anything is not good for you, baby. But I don't know about that. Many times that we've loved and we've shared love and made love, it doesn't seem to me like it's enough. It's just not enough. It's just not enough. Oh, baby.
My darling, I can't get enough of your love, baby. Girl, I don't know why. Can't get enough of your love, baby. Lord, some things I can't get used to. No matter how I try. Like the more you give, the more I want. And baby, that's no lie. Oh, no, baby. Tell me, what can I say? What am I gonna do? How should I feel when everything is you? What kind of love is this that you're giving me? Is it in your kiss or just because you're sweet? Girl, all I know, every time you're here, I feel a change. Something moves. I scream your name. Look what you got to do with, darling. I can't get enough of your love, baby. Girl, I don't know why. I can't get enough of your love, baby. Oh, no, baby. Girl, if I could only make you understand. Girl, your love for me is all I need, and more than I can stand. Oh, well, babe, how can I explain all the things I feel? You've given me so much, girl, you're so unreal still. I keep loving you more and more each time. Girl, what am I gonna do? Cause you're blowing my mind. I get the same old feeling every time you're here. I feel a change. Something moves. I scream your name. Look what you got to do with, darling. I ain't get enough of your love, baby. Oh, no, baby. Girl, I don't know why. Can't get enough of your love, baby. Oh, darling, I can't get enough of your love, baby.
You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. Thank you, one and all, for chilling with me on this lovely, fabulous Friday. The weekend is upon us. And I need to tell you that, because I didn't earlier, you can call in here and talk to me about whatever we're talking about here. The number is 347-857-2620, 347-857-2620. And, of course, the chat room is open, and you can go there as well. But, of course, we got a lot of things going on here to talk about. Of course, we have the was just actually kind of announced this morning that two inspectors general have requested that the Department of Justice open a criminal investigation, the operative word being criminal. Well, it's always the operative word when you're talking about the Clintons, into Hillary Clinton's email situation. And there will be much, much more, of course, coming out in the coming days and weeks about that. And it will be interesting to see how it affects her presidential poll numbers and things of that nature. And, of course, there will be lots of foot dragging so that nothing substantial would come out to harm her before the 2016 election. So this is probably something that's going to go on for a while. But also, last night we had another horrible movie theater shooting. And it's just, these things keep going on and on and on. And, you know, the gun control nuts are, they're going to get their pound of flesh here. They're going to get to put in another 2 cents worth. But this happened last evening in Lafayette, Louisiana. And it happened around 7 p.m. And the shooter has been identified as 59-year-old John Hauser. They've described him as a loner of sorts. He is from Alabama and had come to Lafayette, Louisiana, I believe, just a few weeks prior to this. And as of right now, two people are confirmed dead. There are seven other people who were wounded, three of them critically, and one person who had undergone surgery as of last evening was not doing well. That was according to Lafayette Police Chief Jim Kraft. But I have no updates on those of the people who survived but were critically wounded. I have not seen any updates as yet on them. And one of the other things that the police chief went on to say is that, quote, this is a normal movie theater in a normal part of a normal town. This is anywhere USA, he said. And he also went on to say, this just shows these senseless acts of violence can literally happen anywhere. And the two victims have been identified. One of them is Macy Bro, 21, from Franklin, Louisiana. And Jillian Johnson, 33, from Lafayette, Louisiana. Police do not immediately have a motive at this point because the shooter went on to commit suicide after he shot these innocent people who all they did was go to see a movie. And that part of it may never be known as to why he did this. But Chief also went on to say that he did have some criminal history, but he described it as pretty old. I do know that I saw a report this morning that this man's wife, I believe, ex-wife, there was some sort of restraining order against him, and he was ordered to give up some firearms, I believe, because of some mental issues. Possibly back in 2008. That's still kind of sketchy at this point, but what happened here is that he went into the movie theater, I believe was in the back row of the movie theater, and kind of laid low for about 20 minutes into the movie, just kind of stood up and started shooting. And again, there is really no motive. What they do believe was that his apparent suicide maybe was kind of a kind of a alternative idea that maybe his original plan was to actually escape out of the movie theater, because it said that he did try to sneak out in the melee as chaos ensued after this, and the crowd of people started to leave the movie theater, that he was trying to kind of, you know, blend in with the crowd and leave the theater. His car was also parked very near to an exit. So that's the theory, is that he was going to do this and leave, and that the suicide was kind of a alternative plan. But as soon as they realized that this was, in fact, the shooter who was trying to sneak out of the theater, he was forced back inside until the police arrived. And that, I believe that's when he shot himself. And again, he is described as kind of a drifter who had moved to Lafayette recently from Phoenix City, Alabama. And again, the police chief said that there was no recent criminal history. And upon entering his hotel room, police did find, they found some disguise type things like wigs and glasses and things of that nature. But again, no criminal history in the last 10 to 15 years. He previously had an arson and a misdemeanor arrest, possibly involving the sale of alcohol to a minor. So those are some pretty low level kinds of things. They believe that he really was kind of estranged from his family, and he was denied a pistol permit in 2006 in Russell County, Alabama. So he also has this is kind of what we know so far about this guy, that he had a profile on LinkedIn.com, and he described himself as an entrepreneur with a specialty in investment management. And again, most recently, he was working in Phoenix City, Alabama, as a real estate developer for the past he'd worked there as a real estate developer for about 8 months back in 2006. But it is not confirmed that this, in fact, is his LinkedIn profile page. The only other thing that police found in his hotel room was some signs that he'd been drinking, but no drugs or anything like that. But witnesses to this event say that, again, about 20 minutes into the movie, that he just kind of stood up and started shooting. Didn't say anything. The witness says that she did not hear anyone screaming or anything afterwards, and pretty much what happened. And again, I think we know that all the gun control people are going to, again, be out in force, and they're going to be getting their two cents worth in, because this also comes just within the last week or two, as James Holmes, who is the shooter in the Aurora, Colorado movie theater shooting, was sentenced. And he was convicted last week, in fact, on 165 counts of murder, and from the July 20th, 2012 attack at the movie theater there in Aurora, Colorado. And, you know, the thing is that, of course, our thoughts and our prayers go out to the two deceased and to the other victims who have been critically wounded. Our thoughts and prayers are with them, and we hope for them for a speedy recovery, and possibly physically, maybe mentally and psychologically is a whole other issue. But, you know, guys like this, and we're not going to know, again, because first of all, these guys are cowards, and when they come into places like this, they shoot up the place and they accumulate their victims, but then they shoot themselves because they're too cowardly to face the music and to face what is going to happen to them afterwards. Perhaps James Holmes is the only one who didn't, and I believe there was some theory that he was intent on committing suicide, on killing himself, and for whatever reason, just it didn't happen. So he's really the only one that's left. who is around to maybe talk about a motive and to talk about why he did what he did. I don't know if he has in fact done that, but you know, that's the first thing, is these guys are cowards because they tend to take themselves out after they bray wherever it is they are with bullets. But the other thing with this is that for all the gun control people who are calling for the confiscation of firearms from law-abiding American citizens and for more gun laws and for more this and for more that, these guys look, and the shooting in Chattanooga, Tennessee, all you have to do is look at pictures from that horrific shooting, and that tells you all you need to know. One of the best pictures that I have seen from that, if you want to call it best, but that best illustrates what we're talking about, those of us who are pro-Second Amendment people, is the picture of the gun-free zone sign, the picture of the gun with the big red circle with the cross through it, and it's surrounded by bullet holes and broken glass. That's all you need to know. These guys look for those kind of places. They look for places that are going to have a sign with a gun on it, with a big red circle and a gun and a line through it that says gun-free zone, because they know that no one is going to shoot back. Now, it has since come out in the case of Chattanooga that I believe I saw that there's been some evidence that two of the Marines who were killed did in fact fire back. They had, unbeknownst to anyone, they had some concealed firearms on their person that they were able to pull a shots before this guy took them out. But, you know, it's first of all, and again, maybe this is another topic for another show, but enforce the laws that are already on the books. The other thing is that all of them, obviously, have mental issues. Where is the mental health community in all this? Why are so many of these people falling through the cracks? Because that seems to be happening a lot. And so maybe we need to get a handle on why all of these people are not having their mental health issues addressed before we start talking about taking firearms away from law-abiding American citizens. And again, our thoughts and prayers go out to the people of Lafayette, Louisiana, and to the two who were killed in this horrific shooting and those who are continuing to recover who were wounded from this. And, you know, another thing, too, is that I think I haven't heard a lot of people, be it TV, radio, internet, of course it's on the internet, but there are not a lot of people who are talking about this. And my question about that is that it almost seems like that these shootings are coming one after the other after the other after the other. My question is, are we just getting desensitized to this? You know, are we just, that it's just not phasing us anymore, that it's just not making news? You know, granted, there's other things going on here, like Hillary Clinton being possibly criminally investigated and the whole Iran nuke deal that I really want to get to here in a minute. But, you know, are we just becoming numb to this? Are we just, you know, it happens, and then the anti-gun people come out and do their yelling and screaming, and then the pro-Second Amendment people respond, and it always seems to be the same situation over and over again. So maybe that's something else that we need to look at, too, is that, again, another topic for another show, but are we becoming just numb to this, just jaded and desensitized? You know, you know, I think it's a valid question. It's a valid discussion that we could have. But I need to move on here because we do need to talk about the nightmare that is the Iran nuclear deal. And a few things about that this week is that, well, I think that we all know that the reason that this is not being called a treaty is because if it's called a treaty, then it has to go through the Senate and it has to be ratified by the Senate. And we all know about President Obama's love of doing end runs around Congress because We know that Congress and the Constitution, those are just obstacles for him. No, those are things to be gotten around. And so this week, the UN got to discuss this, believe it or not. The United Nations got to debate and vote on this prior to the United States Senate. Now, isn't that special? And the report I have here is from The Hill, and it says the Obama administration was forced to play defense on Monday after lawmakers in both parties criticized its decision to let the United Nations, not Congress, have the first say on the Iran nuclear deal. Of course, Republicans were all over the Obama administration about this. Incidentally, the UN Security Council's vote was 15-0. Oh, that makes me feel so much better. Of course, the Republicans argued that the White House was giving short shrift to congressional assent in a rush to build international support for the agreement. And the theory is that the Obama administration is, I think, by doing this, by allowing the UN to vote on this before the United States Senate, they think that that's going to put some pressure on senators. And, you know, I hope that kind of backfires, because actually it is. This report from The Hill says that strategy is, in fact, backfiring, including with a lot of Democrats who are kind of wagging their finger at the administration. Representative Elliot Engel from New York, he is a top Democrat on the Foreign Affairs Committee, joined panel chairman Ed Royce from California in a statement saying that they were, quote, disappointed that the UN Security Council voted, quote, before Congress was able to fully view and act on this agreement. And they also went on to say, regardless of this morning's outcome, Congress will continue to play its role. And then there was a response from the administration, and they said that, of course, that the Senate right now has a 60-day window in which to review this. And Secretary of State John Kerry, I believe, was testifying before a Senate hearing yesterday. And John Kerry's argument is that, well, we're kind of between a rock and a hard place, because either the White House is going to get flack here because they are sending this to the UN prior to sending it to Congress, or he says that Iran and the other negotiating nations would balk at the idea of holding their landmark international agreement hostage to one country's legislature. And the quote from John Kerry here is, quote, frankly, some of these other countries were quite resistant to the idea as sovereign nations that they were subject to the United States Congress. Well, you know what, Lurch? Too bad. That's the way it works. And you should know that, having been a former senator. And so that's an interesting little tidbit that the UN got to look at this before the United States Congress, before lawmakers here in the United States. And, you know, the thing is that I think that there's going to also be some pressure put on Congress to vote on this before anybody even has, and that's what they want. That's the end result, is they want Congress to just vote on this prior to having any avenue in which to review and read it and discuss it and debate it. Well, gee, what does that sound like? It sounds like a lot like Obamacare now, doesn't it? Well, we have to pass it to find out what's in it. Going on here, it's the Obamacare theory here. We have to pass it to know what's in it, because when you're talking about Iran and you're talking about nukes, that's not a good thing. But I also have a report here from Reuters that, in case nobody knows, while all of these discussions, while all of these negotiations were going on, there was some things going on in Iran, like chanting death to America, death to Israel, death to, you know, whoever they think that death should come to. And John Kerry, his quote on this was that, like I said, this was going on while these negotiations were going on, that you had chanting death to America in Iran. And John Kerry's statement, his response to this was that it was quote disturbing. Gee, Lurch, you think it might be a little disturbing that these guys are showing you one face and trying to tell you yes, we'll negotiate you with you, when you know very well that they may be sitting at a negotiating table with you, but they certainly have no intention of following through and holding up their end of the bargain. And so the fact that John Kerry would find the fact that there are death to America chants going on while these negotiations are taking place, that this would A, not only surprise him, but B, he would find it, quote, disturbing. Really? You think? I'm going to take a quick break. I will be right back. We've got lots more to get to on this, plus other stuff before we wrap it up. So please don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks, everybody, for chilling with me today. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, one and all, for hanging out with me on this fabulous Friday. TGIF, people, the weekend is upon us. Woohoo! Just got to say that for myself. But hope you are anticipating a fabulous weekend all yourselves. We have been talking about a lot of stuff here, of course. We're talking about a possible criminal investigation into Hillary Clinton's email situation, Emailgate, and we are talking about the nightmare that is this Iran nuclear deal. And I do know, actually, I was really kind of surprised by this, that there was a big rally, a big demonstration the other day in Times Square against this deal. And, of course, you're not going to see it anywhere on the mainstream media because, you know, that might make Barack Obama look bad, and well, we can't have that. But there's so much that's wrong about this deal, you know, even beyond its details. But also, what has come out this week, this is a report from National Review Online, that there's all kinds of things going on the side here with this deal. And again, this is from the National Review, and it says that the president will not allow Congress to review two key aspects of the Iranian nuclear deal. And under the terms of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, that the International Atomic Energy Agency, a.k.a. the UN, would negotiate separately with Iran in the inspection of a facility long suspected of being used to research long-range ballistic missiles and nuclear weapons. And this is a statement here from Representative Mike Pompeo of Kansas, and he says, quote, the Obama administration has failed to make public separate side deals that have been struck for the inspection, air quote, inspection, of one of the most important nuclear sites, the Parchin Military Complex. Not only does this violate the Iran Nuclear Agreement Review Act, it's asking Congress to agree to a deal that it cannot review. And that's exactly what I just said. We have the Obamacare syndrome going on here. We have to pass it to find out what's in it. And the terms of the current agreement would not allow Congress to review any concessions the IAEA makes to get into the site. Pompeo goes on to say, quote, even members of Congress who are sympathetic to this deal cannot and must not accept a deal that we aren't even aware of, which who wouldn't agree with that? You know, maybe Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and John Kerry are very, you know, convinced that Iran is going to do what they say they're going to do and that they're going to be honest and transparent. But how many of us are not? How many of us, you know that there's no way in hell that the Iranians have any intention of holding up any of their end of this bargain? It's ludicrous. And the IAEA, again, will also separately negotiate how they and Iran will resolve outstanding issues on possible military dimensions of Iran's nuclear program. That is according to Senator Tom Cotton, and Pompeo, who serves on the House Intelligence Committee. And they learned of these side deals while meeting with the IAEA in Vienna last week, and they both go on to say, quote, we are only now discovering that parts of this dangerous agreement are being kept secret, and this begs the question of what else don't we know? What, quite frankly, what else are they keeping a secret? Because, you know, it's just this whole thing smells so rotten. And it's, you know, like I said earlier, that the Senate has 60 days, Congress has 60 days to review this agreement and vote on whether they're going to let this go through or not. And, you know, a friend of mine in the chat room here had a really great point. What he said that ultimately he believes, and this is probably what's going to happen, is that a few Democrats are going to jump up and down and yell and scream and make it look like maybe at some point that they're going to side with the Republicans. But ultimately, they are going to be the loyal foot soldiers that they have been for the past 6 years, and they will vote with Obama. But so that's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting because we're going to know. We're going to know who votes in what way. So that will be an interesting revelation to see who votes for national security, basically, because that's what we're talking about here. It'll be interesting to see who votes for national security and who does not. But very quickly here, before I have to get out of here, also this week in Washington, the Cuban embassy opened in Washington, and they raised the Cuban flag above the embassy. And this is the first time, of course, that this has happened in 54 years. And, of course, this comes after the announcement that relations would be normalized between the United States and Cuba earlier this year by President Obama and Cuban President Raul Castro. I'm sorry, it was announced in December that they would begin to normalize relations. And, of course, not everybody is happy about this. A large portion of the Cuban-American community down in Miami has been very vocal about this. And John Kerry met with Cuban Foreign Minister Bruno Rodriguez at the State Department. And Mr. Rodriguez's statement is that, he listed several of the Cuban government's longstanding requests, such as returning the U.S. naval base in Guantanamo Bay and ending the U.S. economic embargo, which Congress actually has shown little interest in lifting anytime soon. But he also says that also what is crucial is, quote, compensation for our citizens for human and economic damages, he said. It would represent a first step in resolving these issues, a.k.a. show us the money. Show us American money, basically, is what is happening here. And, of course, there were a lot of demonstrations outside of this ceremony that took place. And former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, who actually has tweeted that engaging politically with Cuba would, quote, will only serve to further legitimize this repressive regime. Senator Bob Menendez from New Jersey said that diplomatic relations with the U.S. and Cuba, quote, are a privilege and must be earned. Cuban government has failed to do by imprisoning 2,800 political activists this year alone. But Democrat Senator Patrick Leahy responded that if only the U.S. only worked with countries it agrees with completely, quote, we would have to close half of our current embassies, which to me is a little patronizing. But so the U.S. embassy in Washington, D.C. is, or the Cuban embassy, I'm sorry, is open for business. Isn't that special? Very quickly, before I have to get out of here. Linwood, Washington. Snohomish County authorities say two thieves suspected of stealing an ATM machine from a business made it as far as the parking lot, but the machine fell out of the getaway van. Sheriff spokesman Sherry Ireton said Monday that deputies have recovered the ATM machine. They believe two men backed up a white van to a business near Linwood at around 11 a.m. Sunday, cut the cables to the ATM, and loaded it into the van. Deputies believe the machine fell out of the van when the men drove too fast over a speed bump. The suspects drove away without it. Deputies found the van idling Monday morning. It had been reported stolen from Kent. The van was impounded so deputies could look for evidence. Lesson for the day, if you're going to steal an ATM machine, make sure it is secure in the back of your van and don't run over speed bumps. That's it for me. I'm out of here. Please go to theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com, theblacksphere.net. You can also find my writings and other things there. Becky Noble, and at Twitter, I am at Patriot Witch. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with me today. Have a fantastic weekend. I will see you next time.